This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. The folk trio Peter, Paul, and Mary was one of the most popular and significant bands of the 1960s. They were famous for mixing social activism with music, though one of their best-known songs had nothing to do with politics.
Puff the magic dragon, lived by the sea.
Now, Peter, Paul, and Mary had many other hits besides Puff the Magic Dragon, and they continued to tour until 2009 when Mary Travers passed away. Peter Yarrow continues touring today. He performs his folk music and spreads his message for change. And Peter Yarrow is performing at the Duke Energy Center for the Performing Arts in Raleigh Friday at 8 o'clock. But first, he joins me on The State of Things. Peter Yarrow, what a pleasure. So good to have you with us. Thank you.
It's my delight to talk to you, my friend.
I want to talk all about what you're doing today and how the music continues and what you're doing, but please indulge us and take us back to those very beginning days. I know that you started actually in folk music almost by accident, right? You were teaching a course as a TA at Cornell. Am I right about that?
What happened was that in my senior year, I was given the first, the only undergraduate instructorship. There was no other course in which an undergraduate was allowed to be an instructor in a course except for one in folk music and folk ballads that was called English 355-356. And, you know, there was enormous prejudice against it was subtle compared to today, but it was against Jews. If you were African-American, you know, you were a rare person and nobody would look at you unless you were running down the football field with the football. So what happened was that when I got the instructorship in folk music, they all came in and something was transformational. And it's the same thing that happened at the March on Washington in 1963, and it happens every time I sing. It'll happen when I'm there in Raleigh-Durham. All of a sudden, the barriers between people begin to evaporate, and shortly after they're all singing together, a sense of community and acceptance emerges in which people feel comfortable opening up their hearts in a special way. And when I saw that happening in the course, they would come to the course, which is at 10 o'clock, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays, at the largest lecture hall in the college at the time, Goldwin Smith Peak. And they would come there, and they would completely fill up the 350 seats that were there and spill out into the halls and sing, sometimes over 1,000 kids. And I realized that this very act of singing together was really empowering these people who I thought were so backwards to show their stripes as really having a real heart and being capable of a whole other kind of togetherness. And it was because of that that when I graduated, I took my degree. I started out as a physics major, but I got my degree in experimental psychology, and I went to Greenwich Village. And when I was there, my mission, and I did have a sense of mission, was to recapitulate what I had experienced and in that class, is to use the music as a mechanism for creating a sense of community and to affirming the kind of value system that really was inherent in my perspective, that just was beginning to take over America in what was called the greening of America and in the 1960s.
Yeah, and also the folk, what we now look back at as the folk revival in that era, that was also happening. Tell us how you came together as a group. Tell us first how you met Mary Travers.
The story started with Albert Grossman, who was the brilliant genius of a manager, when he asked me to manage me, if he could manage me. He was already working with Joan Baez and Theodore Piquel and Odetta, and I was totally blown away that he wanted to work with me. And he had a vision and a way of protecting his artists and their artistry, ultimately with Bob Dylan and the band and Janis Joplin and Richie Havens and Ian and Sylvia. He was extraordinary. And it was he that came up with the idea. He said to me, "Peter, I think, of course, you know, I admire you. You as an artist, but I have a feeling that if you were to form a group and you were to have a woman singer in it and a comedian, it would be enormously popular." Now, I went looking for a woman singer and a comedian, and I worked with others before, to try it out with others before Mary and Noel. Paul Noel was mainly a comedian in the village at the time.
Noel, who had come to be Paul in the group, but go ahead.
Yeah. Noel Paul Stuckey, yes. And he was over at the Gaslight running the entertainment there. And I was at the Café Wa, and Mary was a village fixture. Well, I saw Mary's picture at the Folklore Center, Izzy Young's Folklore Center, and I said to Albert, "Wow, who is that?" And he said, "That's Mary Travers. She'd be terrific if you could get her to work," which is a quote that she repeats on one of our television shows. The implication being that she was not the most disciplined of people.
And shy, too. Is that true that she was also shy and at least about singing publicly, or is that a myth?
That's untrue.
That is untrue.
That's untrue. She had been, she was in a Pete Seeger organized a group called the Song Swappers of Teenagers, of which she was a part. She was on Broadway with Mort Saul, right, who was one of the so-called sick comedians of that time, like Lenny Bruce and Jonathan Winters, etc., except he was the political one.
Right.
She was anything but shy.
All right.
She was a dynamo of energy, and she was... And she was no nonsense. You did not mess around. You did not mess with Mary. She was. She spoke truth to men, to power. She's remarkable in that way.
Well, but you know, there's still a 2-to-1 ratio of men to women in that group, as I see it. Well, Peter, Paul.
Well, that's a. I'll excuse you this facetious comment. Yes.
Let's talk about your activism as well, because you talked about Albert Grossman, of course, the manager who saw your talent and then could begin to get a grander vision. He also managed another guy whose career was on the rise at the time when the three of you sang this song. Written by Bob Dylan, who was not as well known as you were when you sang that song. And I understand, and tell me about this story, if it's true, that when you told Bob Dylan, because it was an instant hit, right, and it sold a lot, and you went and told Bob Dylan, you know, he's going to make a couple of bucks on this. He was fairly surprised. Is that story true?
Absolutely not. the story of, it's interesting how your information is, other than accurate in my memory at least.
Well, that's why we're talking to you. We want to straighten this out.
Right. No, it's a good... The stories that swirl around Bob Dylan are so filled with fabrication and false information. It's not around us, but around Bobby.
Yeah.
Bob was in the village, and Albert, he was really writing a song a day, pretty much, and he was writing songs about the things he saw in the newspapers, and he was really considered an a Woody Guthrie imitator, in a sense, or put it this way, an acolyte of Woody Guthrie, mm-hmm. because of the way in which the style in which he was singing. Now, Albert came to me and he said, "Well, what do you think of if I were to manage Bob Dylan?" And I thought it'd be terrific. The reason he asked me is that Peter, Paul, and Mary we had the number one album. Bob Dylan was virtually unknown. He then gave us a demo of Bobby's that had Blowing in the Wind and Don't Think Twice on it and other songs. And we fell in love with the song immediately, made an arrangement, and for the only time in our career, he went into the studio and recorded it. Now, by this time, we already had Lemon Tree and If I Had a Hammer as hits. And when we recorded Blowing in the Wind, it reached its zenith the week before we performed at the March on Washington in 1963 in August, on August 28th. And that song presented Bob to the American public, and there was never any discussion of money amongst any of us, because for one thing, it was a surprise. We were living in a crucible of, we were very young, a crucible of creativity. We weren't reaching for the kind of success in the way that people reach for success now. We were just loving what we were doing. And even after the success occurred, we were so busy and so committed to using the music. And this was true of Bob Dylan. It was true of all of the folk singers, you know, that they it wasn't about money. I mean, it sounds ridiculous in terms of the world of art today, but it just wasn't. And for instance, we all went and played for free at the Newport Folk Festival, and the people who drew the crowd would include Bob Dylan and Joan Baez and Peter, Paul, and Mary and Judy Collins. But the people who were exposed were, for the first time, people like Mississippi John Hurt, who, you know, people had never heard this before. And that was one of the real alterations that took place, whereby traditional music, not music as we played it, but as it had been played for long, long periods for generations, was exposed to the American public.
You are still doing it today and bringing in big audiences. How is it different for you now, or is it? And how do you like being on the road?
Well, it's a great privilege to be on the road. I mean, every time I get up, when I sing in Raleigh-Durham, it will not be to 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people like it was to Peter, Paul, and Mary. There'll be a few hundred people there. But to me, and you'll see this if you come, you know, most of the songs I'll have the people sing with me. I'll ask them to come up on stage and sing Puff the Magic Dragon. At least I'll ask the kids to come up on stage for sure. I'll sing the Peter, Paul, and Mary songbook, because that's the music I know and love. That's my music. That's what I love. But the important thing is that I'll also place these songs historically and talk about what they meant then and their relevance today. For instance, even though music generally has become a commodity, where the way in which decisions are made about what's played, etc., has to do with what makes the most money, and therefore, you know, you don't have people who love music who are running the record companies in the way it once was the case. The people are, and it's the bottom line is next quarter's profits here. And you know, You don't find the new Bob Dylan on American Idol. You don't find the people who are stretching the music. You don't hear Blowing in the Wind or We Shall Overcome on a contemporary radio. It's not front and center, but it exists. And if you go to an anti-fracking rally, you're going to hear folk music. If you go to a Black Lives Matter rally, I was up in Harlem singing myself the other day. You know, if you go to the Unity Concert for the Return of the Black Hills, you go to the activist areas where people are looking at what needs to be done in terms of making America a moral, caring place, you will hear this music. It's still there. It's not gone. It's gone from the top 40, but it's still in the hearts of people. You go to summer camps, you'll hear kids singing it. And if you're in the school doing the Don't Laugh at Me program, which is part of Operation Respect that I really started 18 years ago when I heard that song, that amazing song that says, "Don't laugh at me, don't call me name, don't get your pleasure from my pain. In God's eyes, we're all the same.
Don't laugh at me, don't call me names, don't get your pleasure from my pain."
Peter Yarrow, what a great pleasure. Thank you so much for talking with us.
A great pleasure talking to you, my friend.
Peter Yarrow from the legendary folk trio, Peter, Paul, and Mary. Peter's going to be performing at the Duke Energy Center for the Performing Arts in Raleigh on Friday at 8 o'clock. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. The State of Things is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Will Michaels, Charlie Shelton, and Andrew Tai. Robin Copley's the technical director, Brent Wolf, WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachel.
Begging if I had enough to eat. And don't think I don't notice that our eyes never meet. Don't laugh at me. Don't call me.